Hello, Cinnabar Moths, or any kind of moth you'd like to be. Welcome to the Writer's Triangle, Cinnabar Moths podcast about all things publishing and books. Today we are here with Leia John, the winner of the 2021 Cinnabar Moth Literary Collections Award for Excellence in Poetry. Congratulations on your win. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm tired. I still can't believe it's 2021. I feel like I'm still processing 2020, like we just skipped the hell out of a whole year, and I don't know what happened to it.
It really does feel that way, right? It's as if it just kind of got compressed into 2019, and then where'd it go?
Yeah, for sure. You know what's really fucked up is, like, I remember thinking in 2019, like, man, it's like an odd year. Odd years are always really shitty. 2020 is going to be great. Like, even years are amazing. And it turned out to be, like, the shittiest of shit years ever. So, like great. I was so stoked 2019 because Rage Against the Machine announced they were touring again. And I'm like, oh, this is it. Like, this is my year. I can die happy. You know, it's my favorite band. And then I was like, please, God, don't let COVID fuck this up for me. And it did. And it's just been pushed off the last 2 years. So, like, maybe next summer I'll be able to finally see them in concert.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to see them. But I think that'll be a lot of fun for you. I'm hoping that happens for you and for all the other fans.
Me too. Yeah. Like, I feel like at that point, like, once I bought two tickets to two shows, like $600, right? And, like, I feel like you could just shoot me in the head after the first show and I will be like, yay, I've completed everything that I've come to this earth for. Like, amazing. Great. Cool.
Yeah. So you kind of got this a bit of frustration with not having been able to do it for the year. And year and a half now, probably, since they announced it, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
That's quite a long time.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know what the hell. Like, 2020 just dissolved into, I don't know, it was like a really good year in some ways, a really shitty one. I mean, obviously, like, the shit was COVID. Like, it was great because I didn't have to, like, I travel down to New York City, so it's 6 hours away from me by car if I'm driving. You know, every week to work on my master's. So, like, the last year has been like, oh, this is great. I don't have to wake up at 1 a.m. and drive or whatever. And now I'm back to, like, in the city every week, and I hate it there so much. Like, so, the good stuff has been, like, Matthias over at Newington Blue happened to find me somehow, some way, in the abyss that is WordPress, and like it kicked off this whole publishing thing, which is still very bizarre.
And with that, you have the chapbook Fuck It, chapbook of explicit poetry that has the poem that won the Excellence in Poetry Award for 2021 from Cinnabar Moth Collections. How does it feel to be the winner? How does it feel to get that email and find that out?
You know, like I said before, just everything is really bizarre. And I really do question everybody that likes this shit. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, you guys are demented. Like, I know that I'm fucked up and sick, but, like, I didn't know there were that many other people that were that fucked up and sick too, you know? but it's nice. It's very strange. Like, it's the strangeness and the cognitive dissonance of it all is the lasting impression it's just the lasting impression for me that this is like, man, I didn't intend any of this. It just all kind of happens. I mean, it's really cool. It's just really weird.
And so you're still kind of adjusting to the reality of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm smoking a cigarette and drinking coffee because that's what I do at 9:15 Eastern time on a Sunday night. It's just really strange.
Okay. Yeah. So the entire chapbook is called Fuck It. And can you tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind the chapbook, the title, the poems themselves?
Sure. Actually, you know, that's funny. I'll tell you the secret. I had no name for it for months until, like, the week before it was published. And Matthias is like, have you thought of anything? And I'm like, no, but, you know, like, how about fuck it? Or, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And he's like, no, we got to do fuck it. So, like, he's the one that picked it. And the more that I think about it, it really is very apropos to this whole situation. Because, like, I started this WordPress shit, I think, like, last October. Yeah, so a year ago, maybe this week or something. And I was like, well, you know, I've been writing for my entire life. And I was like, well, fuck it. Let me put it on WordPress. See if anybody likes this shit. Maybe I'll meet up with some other poets and we can bitch or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Matthias found me and he's like, do you want to, you know, publish a couple poems in this Bukowski anthology? I'm like, ah, fuck it. Let's do it. You know, why not? That's pretty cool. And then he's like, do you want to do, like, I got a grant for 3 chapbooks. Do you want to do a full chapbook of your own poetry? I'm like, oh, fuck it. Yeah, sure. So it's like, you know, and then it was like, you know, fuck it. Of course I'll join Twitter. You know, so it seems to be the running theme with everything in this whole literary thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe I'll get it tattooed somewhere. Why not?
Okay. So it's just your...
But the whole...
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So it's just kind of the inspiration behind your choice to start doing everything. It's just, why the hell not? Fuck it.
Pretty much. It was like, you know, I think I was like between semesters or... No, maybe it wasn't. I don't even fucking know. I can't remember anymore. But like, I just figured, you know, whatever, man. Put this shit up here. Like, I'd had a lot of stuff sitting and kind of rotting. Mm. And I'm like, well, might as well put it online, you know? Have somebody rip me apart, but nobody has yet, and I'm really disappointed about it. I need somebody to, like, tell me that I'm a disappointment to my mother so I can stay humble or something. I don't know. You know? I don't know. Like, it's just been very strange. It was a lot of older stuff that I've just kept around. Mm-hmm. Shit from, like, nothing from my early teens because it was so fucking dreadful. You know what I mean? But I just couldn't... I couldn't embarrass... Like, I have some scrap of pride, I guess, left in this beaten body, but I just couldn't put some of that stuff on there. But it was a lot for my early 20s. And then when I started posting that, you know, I just started writing again. And it just started coming out. And I remember it was coming out so much that I started scheduling posts. And before I knew it, like, I had 8 months something posted, like, a poem a day. And I'm like, well, cool, I'll schedule those out, and maybe, like, people will like it and follow, and I don't have to do shit, because that was when I was in my semester at that point, mid portion of my semester. I'm like, I can't fuck around with this. So
right.
That ended up helping a lot.
Okay, so it just kept coming out, and now you've got a chapbook, you've got a website that's filled with quite a bit of your poetry, and will continue to have quite a bit of poetry coming from you.
Sure, yeah. And, like, I got another poetry book coming out, I think, like, next week.
Oh, wow.
Called To Swallow the Summer. It's with Budget Press. It's much more tame than fuck it is. It's a running theme. Kind of, or it's like the story of a relationship that never really happened, never really materialized, but is still kind of this warm, nostalgic place marked by some, you know, nasty shit. But I'm pretty happy with it. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty happy that Johnny Baker over at Budget really liked it, and this was not the project that he was supposed to have. I was working on another project, and that turned into this behemoth that, like, will probably come out next year. But I'm like, dude, I have to save this one for me. Like, I have to save this one for me. How about this one? He's like, this is great. Thanks. Like, oh, fuck. Thank you. You know, because that could have went sideways pretty quickly.
Yeah. That's lucky. You've got things... It's fortunate, you know, I am also a fan of your work. I do feel it has this sense of kind of raw and unfiltered emotion being expressed without regard for the impact on the other person so much as I'm expressing myself, and here's the gritty of it, the nitty gritty. Because a lot of time things can be very flowery when it comes to poetry.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm just going to say, I think that kind of poetry that's flowery is shit. I think it lacks imagination, and I think it lacks a lot of guts. And I don't want to fucking read it. And I don't think a lot of people want to read it. And so I'm confused as to why people are still writing this trash. You know what I mean? But that's just my opinion, and I'm an asshole, so you can disregard it. But, in the end, I'm not writing for anybody else. I'm writing for me. It's like a poetry journal, right? I never expected anybody to see any of this shit. Mm. So I'm like, well, I'm not writing for an audience, so who gives a fuck anyway? And then, as I started releasing it, I was like, well, maybe I should edit this to be less raw. And then I'm like, my laziness won out. I'm like, nah, fuck them. It's still not for anybody else but me. If you like it, cool. If you don't, go buy, Browning or, whoever. Mm. Or go read a fucking Jane Austen novel. I don't know. I'm not the bitch for you, and that's okay. Yeah.
And so going a bit deeper into the poems that you have written, the one that we had chosen as the winner of the Award for Excellence in Poetry is Cognac. And so Cognac, I believe, captures some of that raw emotion in a way that's, it captures the predatory nature of the male actor in the poem without going into any of the details. It still has that kind of foreboding sense to it and tells the story without telling any of the story in a lot of ways. And so...
Yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah.
And so I wanted to ask you a bit about you said that you've written these throughout your entire life. And so I was wondering, what was your inspiration has your inspiration changed as you've started writing these poems and moved on and continued?
If I have to say my inspiration is anything, it's my life as I move through it, all of these are embodied experience. There are points in time that I really wish some of these were not true. Shitting my pants. That would be great if it wasn't true 3 or 4 times over, but it has happened. And I think it's what the fuck are you going to do? You're going to laugh at it. Right. So I might as well make some other people laugh at it. You can't spare yourself. I don't think, but it's just my life and I'm writing about it in the way that I know how and in the way that I process it, right? So, something just comes to me. I don't sit down and go, okay, I'm gonna write this. I have an idea. That's how I definitely write, my academic stuff. Mm-hmm. That is definitely how I wrote my third poetry chapbook, but that was a running theme, so it was very, very intentional. But, the rest of it, it's just the chaos that's coming out of my brain at any given time, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I gotta write this down really quick because I'm gonna forget it. And if I sit in quiet long enough, something will always come up, Mm. Cognac is just a snippet of it's actually a repressed memory. So the story behind it in very, broad strokes, I guess, is I was, between 14 and 17, it was preyed upon by a male that was much older than me, by I think 16 years. I was 14, he was 31 when we first met, and it was something that carried on for quite some time. Mm. And I think if I'm looking at Cognac right now, and I kind of laugh at it because it's very sardonically laugh at it because it's very tongue-in-cheek. It says what it is without saying what it is if you have the eyes to catch it, and that was not particularly my intention. My intention was just really to capture a repressed memory as it happened, right? Yeah. And I think what's funny or odd or even infuriating about it is that it's tongue-in-cheek because the after effects of grooming are still there, right? Don't tell anybody. You can't tell anybody this thing. that's right. going on. So I'm like, in a way, I'm telling you without telling you. It's fucked up. It's really funny because I remember a couple of years ago, it was before COVID for sure. And I was going to see a concert with my best friend. We've been together like 37 years, you know, like 32 years. And we were talking about this dude and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, and I mentioned his age when I was 14. So he was like 30, he just turned 31. She's like, fucking what? And I'm like, yeah, you know, she's like, holy shit. I thought he was like our age and whatever. And I'm like, holy shit. And that blew me away. Right. Yeah. Like this son of a bitch groomed me so well that like my best friend didn't even know. And we knew everything about each other. I mean, she knew everything about like the relationship between him and I, but didn't know that it was this, you know, pedophilic thing. So like, and I'm still processing a lot of that shit. For the last 3 years, I guess like what fucked me up was, I don't know if you remember this, a few years ago, this series came out, I think it was on A&E, and was Surviving R. Kelly. And I made a horrible, horrible mistake of watching all of the, like binge watching all the episodes. I was like, I'm into this. I want to watch this crazy shit. I remember the trial back in the 90s. And, like it just started triggering a bunch of shit. And I was like, holy shit. Like a lot of the same stuff, like the grooming process was really, really similar. I mean, there wasn't any like physical abuse, you know, but it was similar enough. Like just the way that this guy would do things and the situation surrounding both of them was really interesting. I'll give you that much. But that's what started it all this processing and like triggering of repressed memories and all this shit. And that's what you get in Cognac, which, you know, I've been playing with this idea of doing a chapbook of poetry, like letters to my pedophile or something, you know, something like that. But I don't know. I don't know that I have the balls to do that. Mm. Like the postscript would have to be something like, Mom, don't read this, you know? I would hate for her to come across something like that, but I think it would be cathartic, but I just don't know that I'm ready for it myself, you know.
I imagine that takes quite a bit of work to get through, and I don't think ever necessarily truly you finish working through it necessarily, but I do hope that your process that goes as smoothly as it can. Feels weird saying it that way, you know. But I hope that it's not too terrible for you and that you're able to, you know, go through your process to process it.
And yeah. You know, it's repression is so much easier. I almost prefer it at this point. Like, I don't want to deal with this shit right now. You know, I don't want to deal with it ever. Mm-hmm. I'd rather just shove it down, let it fester and rot. Cool, we're good. Let's move on. You know, let's move on with life. But, you know, the after effects of something like that really fucks with your head. You know, like, you end up walking out of a situation like that with very, very disordered, especially that young, you know, your brain just isn't fully formed. You walk out with very, like, dysfunctional and disordered thoughts of, you know, love and sex and relationships and what these things are. Right. And, like, so you live your life a certain way thinking, like, oh, okay, everything's cool. And you're like, oh, fuck, I got daddy issues and, like, pedophile issues. Great, let's compound that shit. Oh, why not write a chapbook of poetry? Fuck me, right?
Yeah. That does sound quite difficult. But you have written the chapbook of poetry and you have started your process for developing and processing through that. And going back to the inspiration process, you mentioned that you draw inspiration from your own life for a lot of your work and that you have a few projects going on in the future. And so I was curious, when it comes to your future projects, are you hoping to be able to continue doing chapbooks? Is that going to be your main goal with your writing? Or are you hoping to take it in a different direction? What's your overall goal with your poetry?
Honestly, like, I don't know that there's any other direction to take it in other than chapbooks. Like, I just don't know shit about the literary scene. It was not something I intended to get into. Like, I was A-okay with this little you know, armpit of the internet on WordPress and whatever. So for me, it's like, okay, cool. Like chapbook. Like what else is there to do? You know, that or like live tweet some weird shit. I mean, I can't imagine anything else aside from, I don't know. You have any ideas you want to pitch to me? You know,
I wasn't sure if you're planning on expanding from poetry and going into other forms of media, for example.
Oh fuck. Well, you know, Christopher has been on my ass really hard to start working on a novel, and I keep telling them that, like, I can't fucking hang, man. Like, I'm a poet that cannot write fiction. Like, it's just not gonna happen. But I have tried flash, and I use air quotes here, flash fiction. It's not really fiction. I'm just drawing from my life, and it's creative nonfiction, but, like, nobody would believe me anyway. I got one about something happened a couple weeks ago. Somebody pissed on the train, like on it, in it, in the train. And I'm like, I got to write about that. That'll be great. But like, I just don't know that I could transition over to like full length stories. I can't, I operate so much out of my own narrative and I'm so used to writing about my embodied experiences that trying to imagine writing something like a novel where there has to be dialogue, it's going to end up being me talking to myself, which is really weird and probably not that interesting. I don't think that I could go. I think I could do flash fiction. I think I can do creative nonfiction for sure, but anything more than that, it's going to be a steaming pile of shit.
Well, I think that you do have a very creative mind, and that whether you decide to, maybe a separate thing, but I think that you're capable of, you could write a novel if you chose to. Whether or not you feel comfortable doing so, of course, is your own prerogative. But when it comes to poetry, you do have a wonderful body of work already. And are you hoping to win any more poetry awards, or are you just thinking of just continue to pump out the chapbooks and see what happens?
Honestly, like, I don't know. Like, the only other award that I've gotten or even knew about, and that was in the moment somebody recommended to me, was the Anita McAndrews award for poetry and human rights. And that was last year. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I got the perfect ship for that. Let me put it in. And I ended up winning it, which was pretty dope. And because I could identify, that fucking poem was funny because I was in seminary a few years ago prior to this one. And we had to, like, one of our class assignments was to write a psalm, right? Like from the Bible, like write a psalm. I fucking hate psalms. If anybody knows me, it's the book of the Bible I can't fucking stand. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to write a psalm. So I ended up writing this thing, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is not that bad. Turned it in, got an A, cool, did my job. But then I ended up, like, looking at it, like, hey, this is pretty chill. So I ended up submitting a fucking class assignment from five years ago for a poetry contest and won, like, you know, I don't know, $100 or something. Like, well, fucking shit, I'm going to go out and get dinner for myself. But other than that, like, I don't know of any other awards other than, like, Pushcart and, like, somebody's been joking with me, like, they're gonna nominate my ass eating poem like for a push cart, and I'm like, oh fuck, like, well, that'll be something different for them. Like, don't do that, that's a bad troll, but it still would be pretty funny. That would be great if I could get like a coming or a shitting poem or like an ass eating poem win a push cart. Pinnacle of my life right there.
So that's something to aspire to. You write a poem so good that they take it even though it's about eating ass.
Yeah, why not? You gotta represent all the genres, you know?
yeah, there is quite a variety, and there's a range of audiences. I'm sure there are plenty of people that would eat it up, so to speak.
For sure. It's funny because, like, I was looking at who started the push cart, and like all of these people's ass hairs would be in a fucking knot if like they even saw some of my work. But like, it's like a gigantic shit post. It's great. I love it. I love the idea.
And so going into, you have a poem about eating ass as well. And you have this a poem that is in the chapbook of Fuck It, where you are literally talking about the fact that you don't edit your work, which you mentioned earlier in this interview. And so I want to ask you, is there something about this, your process for writing, that you think would surprise people that have, that are reading your works?
I think the fact that I don't, like, I just don't edit, that is, maybe that's surprising. Like, I don't know. It's not surprising for me, but I'm the one writing this shit, so I don't, you know? Mm. But yeah, I don't edit. I don't, it's not, you know, it's not supposed to be grammatically correct or fucking, you know, I don't give a shit about meter and rhyme and does it beat, like, none of that. I don't give a fuck. I don't care. Like, does it say something? Is it saying something to me? Do I feel like, you know, do I feel like I took a really good shit after I wrote this poem? Like, do I feel relieved? If I don't, something's wrong, and I throw it the fuck out, you know, like, okay, this is shit. Oh, I can tell you about, like, process, right? So for me, if I'm sitting down and intentionally writing, which is very rare, like, okay, I made some time, I'm going to sit down and write, then the first for me is, like, I have to, it has to be really late at night. Like, the whole house has to be quiet. Brains have to be asleep. Like, I need that silence for my brain itself to be silent. And something will always come up. Some shit always comes up. So for me, like, I have this, like, mantra that's, you know, you're not writing a story, you're capturing a moment. And for me, what I try and do is, like, okay, I've got this memory or this shit happened the other day. Where's the moment of impact, right?
Right.
So, like, what's the fireball moment? Like, what's the moment that makes you laugh? What's the moment that, you know, makes you, like, disgusted, if I'm intending to do that? Like, where is it? So what I think about when I'm writing these things, if I'm writing intentionally, is, all right, like, find that moment of impact and world build around that moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I assume is probably pretty similar to what novelists are doing, you know. But I just don't carry it on for 100+ pages. Like, that's mind-blowing to me. I don't know how the hell they do that. Like, mad props to the novelists out there, for real, man. I respect your hustle. I can't do it myself. But yeah, I try and, like, I sift through that memory and I find that moment of impact. Like, okay, if I'm writing this thing about the chick that, you know, pissed on the train, like, it's probably going to be about the moment her and I locked eyes and I just shrugged, like, all right, you know, what are you going to do? Piss on the train, baby. It looks like you had to pee a lot because you pissed for 5 straight minutes. Like, all right, it's cool. Fuck the MTA. I don't care.
That's,
you know,
impressive.
That's that moment of impact of, like, what my reaction is, or the connection of humanity, or whatever, you know. I know it when I know it. You know what I mean? Mm. It's like grabbing your lover's ass. Like, okay, I know that muffin. That's mine. So, like I grabbed the ass of that moment. Like, there's that muffin. That's mine. And I just world build around it. Mm. So I don't know if that's normal for people, but that's just the way my brain works, I guess.
Yeah, that moment that clicks for you, that feels right for the what you want to write and has the most significant impact. I think that a lot of people do draw from those moments in their lives, even if they're not always aware of it, right? Of drawing from moments of big impacts in their minds, even if it's not necessarily massive in the scale of, you know, their entire life, just in these brief moments, something that kind of rises above the normalcy of the day.
For sure, yeah. excuse me. I was trying to think about, like, one of the poems. I don't remember. It's a really old poem, and that's kind of where I came up with this, find the moment of impact and build world build around it. Because I started writing a poem pretty intentionally, and it was like, this fucking sucks. Like, this is a piece of shit poem, because I'm not writing a poem. I'm writing a story at this point, giving you backup detail. Like, nobody gives a shit about that. Where's the moment of impact? And that's where that set in for me. Mm. I'm like, okay, well, that's where I'm writing. And it ended up coming out far less shitty.
And so for you, you don't like all this extra stuff around it. You just want to be hit with it, straight to the point, feel impacted, give it to me. is kind of right. Your own and, you know, style, like, with yourself, as well as when you're when you're reading other stuff, is that also what you look for?
Absolutely. You know, I don't want to read it, but like a fucking epic, right? But you know, it's not just in reading too, like in a conversation. Have you ever talked to somebody, and I'm probably one of these people, you know, very like brevity is not my strong suit, you know?
I'm like, one of those people too, don't worry.
Okay, cool. And we're in good company. but these people, like, I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty straight to the point. We'll get to it. But, like, I've got a couple of friends where, like, I feel my head doing the lift. Like, okay, where's the fucking point? Like, I got shit to do. Tell me the fucking, what's the point of this story? Like, I don't like it in conversation. I don't like it in books. I don't like it in movies. I'm like, okay, this is, like, get, like, come to the point. Where is it? What do you like? You know what I mean? Like, what are you trying to tell me here? So I don't want to dick around with, like, a lot of pastoral imagery or flowers or, you know, whatever, touchy-feely shit. That's why I really love Bukowski's work. He just wrote the way that he wrote. He wrote it, you know? Like, he had the balls to write it. Although he did have a tiny bit of self-preservation here and there. But overall, not. And he just didn't give a fuck, and I respect the hell out of that, because giving a fuck takes a lot of energy, and I don't have a lot of that. I'm sure maybe he didn't have a lot of that after binge drinking and, like, vomiting and everything, you know? I don't know. But, yeah, like, I don't have that energy to waste reading shit like that or writing shit like that or talking to people who want to do this to my poor brain.
And so would you say that your greatest inspiration from people that you read would be Bukowski, or would you, or is it somebody else in your life for starting poetry, or even for continuing poetry? Is it just your experiences inspire you, or what would you say is, like,
you know,
greatest inspiration?
You know, I started writing poetry before I ever read any. I just, you know, I've been writing since I was really little, and it started out with the, you know, like, retelling, like, childhood fables, or, you know what I mean? Like, I vividly remember, like, doing a picture book, a staple picture book of, like, The Princess of the Pea, when I was really young, like, maybe first or second grade, somewhere around there. But it just kind of evolved into, you know, I always loved English class, and so, like, I would write these little stupid short stories, and then I got into poetry because it was just, like, it was easier, I suppose, without, like, I don't know if I was just lazy or didn't have time, so it just evolved into that. And, like, I was still writing short stories, but it just took too much time. And then I remember, like, the first poetry book I got was Maya Angelou's Book of Poems. And I just remember, like, she's tattooed on my right arm, my right forearm. And, like, I love her work because it's still very real, but not, you know, not, it's done beautifully. You know what I mean? There's a lot of beauty and dignity there. I think, like, her and Lorraine Hansberry go hand in hand, where there's this really shit experience that you don't deny it being shit, but you still are able to find dignity in the middle of it. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think it's really important. I think, you know, Lorraine and Maya Angelou, Toni Morrison, too, are probably, like, some of the three most important female writers of the century. And, you know, you've got Toni Morrison doing novels and Lorraine Hansberry doing plays and Maya doing autobiography, many, many of them, and, you know, incredible works of art. I mean, she was an artist, and she drew from her life. So I guess, like, if I have to say, like, if there's an inspiration for a poet specifically, it would probably be her. Because of how very personal she got. And, like, I'm not talking about, like, just personal, like, her internal experience, but also, like, her embodied experience with a very fucked up world around her. And she's she's not pulling any punches in that, but she's also not sinking to my level, which is, like, well, you know, we're going to talk about piss and shit, like, you know, and Lorraine Hansberry does the same thing, with, you know, think about like A Raisin in the Sun. We're talking about Southside, Chicago in the 60s, very segregated, and, you know, death and money and segregation and moving into a white neighborhood at that time, what that means. And there's this immense amount of, like, there's immense amount of dignity and, nuance, I guess, to that situation. And she still tries to find the beauty in this shit, where, you know, flip side of that, Toni Morrison's just like, I'm going to show you the shit, you know, like, here it is. I don't know if you've ever read like Sulo, you know, where, one of the main characters is talking about, you know, having to grease up her finger to unconstipate her baby, you know? And I respect the shit out of that too. Like, she's giving it to you the way that it is. And it's a work of fiction, but like, it's ugly art, and ugly art is so important, you know? Because I think in a sense it becomes more valuable, at least to me, it becomes more valuable, because these people have the testicular fortitude to, just be like, this is it. And that's why, like, I admire Bukowski too. Like, he's, this is it. You're not getting it. Like, what you see is what you get, you know?
Right.
I'm trying to think of, like, Hunter Thompson's another, like, if I'm looking at the tattoos on my arm, then I've got Maya Angelou tattooed there. I've got Hunter Thompson tattooed there. I've got, holy shit, I had to look, Nabokov, and Daniel Quinn. Like, these are pretty big writers to me for one reason or another. Hunter Thompson's huge for me. He's another one that just fucking told it like it is. He danced with his demons and they won. And to have I think, you know, I don't know if it's courage or stupidity or just not giving a fuck, to dance with your devils and be like, yeah, they won and this is my life. You know, and then when I'm done, I'm gonna drink a bottle of whiskey, smoke a fucking Pall Mall, and blow my head off, you know, over my typewriter. I think there's a certain type of, like, it's gonna sound really fucked up, but I think there's a certain type of integrity to that, you know? It's my life, and I live it the way that I fucking want. And right under, like, a portrait of Hunter Thompson, I have a portrait that Ralph Steadman did it with him, and Ralph Steadman just does, like, is a really ugly inkblot artist, and I fucking love his work. And it's supposed to kind of capture this duality of him. Like, everything looks good on the surface, and then he's this fucking monster inside. And I like it. Like, I really respect it. Really, you know, I admire that. Because I don't even think that I could go that far. You know, there's a point where I'd be like, yeah, I could dance with my fucking trauma and my crazy bullshit. But there's a point where self-preservation kicks in, and I'm like, I gotta process this so I can live another day. Because I don't do any drugs. All I got are nicotine and coffee.
Right.
A lot of coffee. yeah. I guess, like, those are my inspirations. I'm trying to think of, like, other human beings on the face of the planet that I really respect the shit out of. Like, oh, I'm gonna pick up their book.
Daniel Quinn, like, he's somebody that's written kind of like this new tribal life thing. He's the guy that wrote Ishmael, and I really like his vision, like this kind of anthropological view. Nabokov, I just, you know, my favorite book is probably Lolita for its own reasons, you know, like, I identify very much with Lolita, with Dolores a lot. But I think there's this kind of incredible beauty about the way Nabokov writes. Like, fuck, I wish I could write that way. And then Miller, he was very close to being tattooed on me. You know, like the opening of Tropic of Cancer, I think it is, where he's like pulling lice out of his roommate's armpits vacuum. Like, doesn't get any more real than that. Or I remember, like, the moment I fell in love with him. It's the same book. Maybe like a few pages later, and he's talking, like, he's writing this letter, talking to this woman, Tanya, And he's like, you know, I'm gonna fuck you. Like I'm gonna fuck you, and after me, you're gonna be able to take on wild horses. Like I'm gonna fuck you and make your ovaries, like I'm gonna make your ovaries incandescent. And I'm like, God damn, that is fucking amazing. I think maybe I was like 16 when I read that, and just fell in love. Like, think about that. Like your ovaries being incandescent. Like, God damn. Like he lit that pussy up, is what I'm saying. But like to be able to describe it is that I was just, you know, what's the word? Smitten.
And so for you, all these, I think I see a common theme amongst all of these different writers and artists and poets and everything, is that they have this certain unforgiving realism to what they do.
Yeah, and in a way, like, I mean, more so with the others, Hunter Thompson and Bukowski and Morrison, and like an artist that I love, a painter, is Francis Bacon. Oh my fuck, man. Like, I'm in love with this man and his work, but it's grotesque. It's really grotesque. And like, what I love is that, like, this is what's real, right? Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. Just fucking deal with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Life sucks. Buy a helmet. What else are you going to do? I think that the courage to be able to just tell it like it is, because we are so insulated. You know, we're told that, like, we always have to be polite in this situation. Oh, you don't say the thing. Like, do I look fat in this dress? Oh, no, you look great. Okay, well, I can see your cellulite. You know what I mean? that's bad, but maybe you don't want that look. But, like, there's this, we trade in little white lies, right?
Yeah.
All day, every day. Oh, you look fine. I feel good. How are you doing? Oh, I'm great. You know, we wear this mask. And these specific artists, Toni Morrison, Hunter Thompson, Bukowski, Francis Bacon, they're like, fuck that mask and fuck you for wearing it. And here's what I'm going through. Like, look at it. I'm human. Deal with it. You know, there's another Twitter writer who I really describe like this, Scott Wozniak. He's like it too. Like, his stuff is so gritty and so human. Like, I'm fucking human. Look at it. And here's the ugly shit of human existence. Like, deal with it. HLR is like that too. God, I just love her. She's one of the most amazing writers that I've found on Twitter to date. But all of them have this raw realism to them. And I think that's what's compelling, right? Like, we live in such a fucked up, dumbass world that this, especially now, maybe in our generation, that things have just, the pimple has come to a head, you know what I mean? Or the boil, or whatever you want to call it. The herpes has arisen. And, like, it's time to fucking lance the boil, but everybody's too afraid of it. But we've got some really incredible artists and writers out there that are saying, all right, let's do this shit. I'm going to pop this fucking boil and let the pus seep out. We're going to have to deal with the consequences and clean it up.
Yeah.
And I think that's really fucking, you know, like, it's really cool. It's admirable and it's fun. And I think that capturing the human condition and all its shittiness is what is compelling. Nobody wants to, like, we're not kids anymore. You know what I mean? Like, we're not reading fucking fairy tales. Although I do love Harry Potter with the Vengeance and the Mortal Instruments. And I need that. Like, I will read those things when I feel so shitty that I need to be reminded there is something good in the world. Right. But that's not what I want to read the most of the time. What compels me, what captures my attention, is the shittiness of the human condition. Because it's like, well, I'm not alone, I guess. I'm feeling like a piece of shit. You know, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, there's somebody else who's also in, you know, in dark, feeling dark with me. And their demons may be different than mine, but recognizing, hey, there's another person struggling with their demons too. And we're not alone in our struggle to deal with the fact that life doesn't actually, isn't all rainbows, chocolate, candy, and fun times. It's a lot of dirt, grime, blood, sweat, tears, sadness, and everything.
You know,
else
there was a for sure. There's a quote. I can't remember who this guy's name. I think he was the past editor of maybe LA Quarterly.
I can't fucking remember. It's in a Bukowski documentary, but he said the most wonderful thing about Bukowski's writing, and it just tickles my tits, I guess. He said that he liked Bukowski's work so much because Bukowski was committed to the de-Disneyfication of the mind, right? That, you know, everything is made to be so great and so wonderful and la, 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 la. But really what you have is a four-fingered soulless bastard. And nobody wants to talk about the reality of that. And you know, we need that Disney shit taken from our head. You know, it's like I said, it's great for kids, not for us, not for adults. So yeah, like maybe that's what I like about these writers, the deep Disneyfication of the mind.
I think that's a wonderful phrase. And I think that you also, with your work, perhaps you don't necessarily go to, as you mentioned, as dark of a place as some of their works do. But I do think that you also have that sort of demystification of the mind as well, in the way that you are willing to kind of lay these things bare in your poetry. And that's part of what we really appreciate and enjoy about it here at St. Barmoth. That's part of why I was chosen for the Award in Excellence in Poetry. And we appreciate you. I know you said thank you, but thank you for sharing your work for us to be able to have the opportunity to experience it. Because you could have chosen not to, but you said fuck it, just like the title of your chapbook.
Yeah, I said fuck it. Yeah, why not? Let's do this thing. Yeah.
And so before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you if you could suggest one indie poet that you'd like to let people know about out there. Is there anyone that you would suggest perhaps to our listeners?
Shit, that one, that's hard. You know, I do this, well, I was over the summer, now I don't have fucking time anymore, reading people's chapbooks like other indie poets. You know, my first knee-jerk reaction is always going to be HLR. She's just, fuck me, man, like, she's incredible. Her chapbook, History of Present Complaint, was the first one I bought.
I'm sorry, you're a little bit far from the mic, so I can't hear you that well.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, like, it's really hard to choose one, and, like, my knee-jerk reaction would be to do HLR, because she's just, I think, one of the most talented, raw writers on Twitter right now. History of Present Complaint is what it was the first Twitter chat book that I bought over the summer. And it is my favorite. I've got so many like notes in the margin from it. It's breathtaking. It's something that I really want to read over and over again. And aside from her, like, I don't know if like the dirty side of Twitlitter, meaning my side with all the fucked up weird shit, like, knows about another woman. Her name's Taylor Bias. And she did a chapbook, released a chapbook this summer, I think with Variant, I want to say, Variant Lit. I could be wrong. Yeah, Variant Lit, called Bloodworm. And god damn, that's another one. I've got tons of notes in the margins and stuff. And there's this incredible poem. I think it's something like, something of my morning tea, how I take my morning tea. And it's a... holy shit, man. It's like a poem hidden within a poem, which reminds me of James Scott's Domination and the Art of Resistance, where he's talking about like a hidden transcript, right? Code switching. When I saw that, I was like, holy fuck, is this what you're doing? And she's like, oh my God, you got it. Like, oh my God, I'm so impressed. Like, I can't even handle this right now. I need to go to dance. But yeah, those two women, HLR and Taylor Bias, hands down, I think, the best writers that I've encountered on Twitter yet. Sorry, guys. It's the ladies right now.
Hey, women have a lot of wonderful writers in their midst. You amongst them, from our opinions. Okay. And I thank you for giving these two suggestions. I will be sure... For those of you listening, we will be making sure to include links to their information along with the stuff for Leia John here. So I wanted to thank you for talking with me today and for being on the Writer's Triangle. I think that it's been wonderful being able to get to know you better and get to understand the person and get to know the person behind the wonderful work and wonderful poems that you shared with us. And congratulations again on being the winner for the Cinnabar Moth Literary Collection's Excellence in Poetry Award. And before we go, can you tell us where we can find you on social media, website, all of that?
The website is www.poemsthatsuck.com. And I'm on Twitter, not a ton right now, just because it's the beginning of the semester, but it's at suckasspoetry. Yeah, I think that's pretty much where you can find me all the time. Come stalk me. I like stalkers, especially the perverted ones. That's great.
So thank you for sharing, and for all of our listeners, be sure to visit cinnabarmoth.com or cinnabarmothliterarycollections.com and check out the transcripts. We'll have the social media links, and we'd like to thank you all for listening. But for today, it was wonderful having all of you, and goodbye.
Bye.